Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 140, recorded November 19th, 2001.
Greetings, Aquarimax.
Good evening.
So who do we have on the queue there?
We have Andreka in Oregon and Kelsey in California, Matt in Perth, Australia, and Mick. Shall I say where he's from?
Yes.
Okay, he's from Carnforth in the UK.
Yeah, we gotta be consistent, you know? We gotta make sure we...
Yeah, I know, but it's almost like having to say who we are every week.
Well, we're glad that Mick is a regular contributor.
If Mick lived in Utah, he could just do the show with us every week. Because that would be cool, right?
Sure. Oh, you know, Juliet in France, in Paris, France, also contacted us. And
oh,
I forgot to put it there because she just mentioned that there was a problem with the podcast. She brought it to our attention.
What happened?
We have now fixed it. But thank you, Juliet.
Okay, that's good.
For the warning.
Was it the problem we were having getting it up last week?
That the podcast was not uploading properly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was frustrating. Okay, well, shall we dig in?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to Andreka first. She says, I submit this. What are the finer points of top 10 absolutes about fish keeping for freshwater and saltwater that will guarantee happy, easy fish keeping? I.e. for nano tanks, if you are a careless newbie, avoid sensitive critters. If you must, house only snails. This is the guide for the anti-OCD impatient new folks that I'm talking about. For example, today I saw some friendly, happy, healthy-looking, fins intact, scars absent puffers in with mollies. Everybody was fine. There were even smaller fish in there. This was a 75-gallon tank. I was so impressed I asked the sales clerk what the magic was. The size of the tank. I talked about how my fish troubles started with a nano tank, as it is so easy for water parameters to get out of balance in a small tank. Then I talked about how much it would be to get set up with puffers, and he said, well, you could get a nano tank. That seems weird if she was just saying that she had problems with a nano tank, that he would suggest that.
Right.
Perhaps he was not really listening.
Yeah, I think that's her point.
I want to avoid anything requiring bending over backwards to make it work, or stupid or not so stupid mistakes. So what could you say are guaranteed absolute restrictions, common pitfalls to avoid, and recommendations for happy, hassle-free salt and freshwater tanks?
Hmm. Okay. Well, this is a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are several directions we could go with this, but I'll just tell you some of my ideas, and we'll go from there. I did take some notes on this, and I think number one, before you start, before you get the tank, have a clear idea of what you want. So many aquarists go into the hobby, you know, or would-be aquarists, although some people say aquarists, I've heard it both ways. They go into it just thinking, oh, fish would be cool, and then they go get a tank, and then they say, oh, that so would that fish, that would be cool. I'm going to get that fish too, and some of these, you know. And then pretty soon you have a hodgepodge of fish in the tank, and they don't necessarily go well together. And even if they can survive together, they're not necessarily the most pleasing combination or configuration to keep together, right? And so you can have the Noah's Ark syndrome, where you have two of everything, or you can
seven of everything.
End up having
clean,
one of
clean fish, you'd have seven of everything.
Sorry. Or you'd have one fish that has eaten everything, or, you know, different things happen.
Yes.
So basically, what do you want out of the tank?
I think they all kind of became vegans while they were on ARC, just temporarily.
Maybe.
You know?
I don't know. And so if you get the idea of what I'm saying, just decide what you want out of the tank, what the purpose for having the tank, what you want the tank to look like, and which species you want first. And that can be hard as a newbie because you don't really know what you like. But if you look at a lot of tanks on YouTube, for example, and other websites, to get an idea of what really kind of attracts your attention and attracts your eye, then that can be something that helps.
Well, and like you always say, do your research.
Right, and
before
which
you
is
buy anything.
Which is number two. That's a nice segue into number two. I know you didn't see that, but
I hadn't actually read over your list yet.
You were thinking along the same lines, so
we must be married or something.
Yeah. So you should do your research on species requirements, compatibility, and once you have determined what those are, which you can't do by looking at usually one website, you've got to look at a number of them and get some ideas. Don't skimp on the tank size or the number of fish. If it's a group of, you know, a kind of fish that needs to have members of its own kind, don't just get one or two, you know, get enough of them. Make sure you know if they are territorial fish, what size of territory they need, and what sort of ratio you should have in terms of males and females, what kinds of equipment they need, the water parameters they need, and so on. And don't mix incompatible species, which I guess we kind of already talked about. And don't just go to the store and say, hey, will these two fish look good together? Because unless you trust the owner or the clerk or whoever you're talking to, and you should have a reason for trusting them before you do, then they may give you crummy advice, either because they think they know and they really don't, or because they don't really care as long as you buy something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not saying everybody's like that, but it does happen. And don't trust the label necessarily in the pet store, because a lot of the labels there, if you look at them and they'll say, oh yeah, this fish is peaceful, and it isn't necessarily peaceful, or things like that. Or the minimum tank size is way too small, different things like that.
Yeah.
Do your research first. Number three.
Fishlessly cycle.
If you can possibly manage, it's the better way to go. And while you're at it, make sure everything is working. So while you are cycling, make sure the heater is working. It can sometimes take a few days to calibrate your heater properly. Make sure your thermometer is working, that the filter is running properly, all of those things while you're fishlessly cycling, and then you're less likely to run into problems with those things once you put the fish in.
Number four would be quarantine.
Yeah, if you can possibly manage it, it's really a useful thing, and especially if you're stocking gradually. For example, if you're going to get, you know, one bed and a few shrimp in a tank, for example, and you decide, and you buy them all at the same time because the tank's already fishlessly cycled, quarantine might not be as big of a deal as if you're going to introduce a school of this and then a few others of these and so on over time, but still, it would be beneficial. And the best way to go. Number five.
Observe your fish.
And this means not only look at them and see how they're doing. Often you can tell by their behavior that something is wrong. Just for example, if you feed your fish and they normally eat voraciously, but one day they don't, that's a big warning sign that something's up. And so you can immediately begin to take other precautions and try to do some tests. Look for problems, yeah. And maybe do a water change, a partial water change, just to see, you know, if that helps while you're getting a reading on water parameters. Look at the temperature, look at all those sorts of things. And do that frequently. Number six.
Err on the side of too little food rather than too much.
Right. Very important. That is extremely important because I think beginners especially have a tendency to overfeed. And one big feeding a day, sometimes, I mean, you'll get better growth, better health, and so on if you feed a fish 3 to 5 times a day than you will if you feed it one big feeding anyway. And it might even actually end up eating less food, but the way mm-hmm. it can work, it seems to grow better if you're just separating it out. So the next one is partial water
changes.
Yeah. And, you know, this varies depending on the setup, because I know, Andreka, you mentioned freshwater, saltwater, and so on. Saltwater tends to, you know, there are a few water changes done, typically, or a smaller proportion of water changes, for several reasons. One is because saltwater is expensive.
Because you have to mix the salt.
Right, and more difficult to do. And also a well-balanced tank with live rock and so on, and lower stocking rates that you typically have in a marine tank make it possible to do with lower proportions of water changes in terms of frequency and or percentage, but you still should do them regularly. But it also depends on the species you have, the bio load, whether the tank's planted or not, and so on. But I would say just make sure you have a regular schedule, and it might be, you know, up to, we have tanks we do 50% per week, like our goldfish tank and Hito's tank. We have fish tanks that we do much less, like the Opaiula, the Hawaiian shrimp. I don't do a change every week. I don't need to do very frequent changes with those. So it just depends on what you've got. But if it's a nano tank, you may just need a little bit of, depending on the size, you may just need a clean cup, soap-free cup that you can use to change the water. You may need a gravel washer. If it's a big tank or you have a number of tanks, you may need a an automatic water changer that you hook up to the sink, you know, like a Python like we have. But you need to do them regularly for so many reasons. And if you don't, you will find out why. But, you know, I think you know in general, our listeners know why you should do them, but sometimes people think, well, I'm going to see if I can get away without doing it, and you nearly always suffer from doing that. And newbies particularly are tempted to try to get away with fewer water changes than they should do. Not all, but many. Number 8.
Keep your filter flowing.
Yeah. This means not only changing the filter pads or filter sponges or whatever they are, keeping those clean and unobstructed, but clearing obstructions from the tubing, the inlet tubes in various parts, keeping the impeller clean. It's easy sometimes to remember, oh, I change the filter cartridge every X weeks, and that's, you know, maybe that's good. But if you don't make sure that the filter tubes themselves are unclogged, you can gradually get a reduction in water flow that causes problems, and maybe not notice because it's so gradual. So that's something else.
Number 9 is don't overstock.
Right. That lower bioload means a lower workload, basically. So if you're overstocking, which is really easy to do with small tanks, really exceptionally easy to do with small tanks, most small tanks are probably overstocked, then it's going to be a problem. And that's part of the reason why larger tanks are just easier. There are many reasons, including just more forgiving because you have a bigger system, so it's more resilient, but also, it's harder to overstock a big tank. Well, you can do it, but you need more biomass to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. Don't overstock. And a lot of the nano tanks out there are very few options, really, about what you can keep in them. There are more and more as time goes on, and we discover more species of shrimp and micro-resboras and things like that. But still, relatively few. And relatively fewer of the bread and butter type fish you find in a lot of the big box stores and so on. And I would say the last one is...
it's an art, not a science.
Or it's a science, not an art. Mutually incompatible, contradictory statements. However, I believe in them both. Do you see what I mean? Really?
How about it's a scientific art?
Or it's an artistic science?
Yeah.
Yeah. You really, there's so much going on there. You can have a tank, like the tank you described, Andrika, where it's a 75-gallon tank. You have all these puffers and mollies, and they get along famously. And maybe they do. And then after one, let's say, a six-month period, boom! Everything goes ballistic.
They don't like each other.
It can happen. Or maybe it'll go on for years, and everybody will be fine. It's hard to tell. Because there are, in addition to just general species, you know, requirements and habits and so on, you do have individual variation in not only the species, the individual species, the of the species and the temperaments of those individuals, but you also have your particular setup has idiosyncrasies and unique qualities. So you never know. Like, we were doing fine for a while some years ago when we were keeping those Siamese algae eaters in with goldfish. And everything was fine until they got to a certain age, and then everything went nuts, and we had to take them to the pet store the next day because they were attacking the goldfish. So, you never know. Not something I recommend keeping with goldfish anyway anymore, but I did try that with poor results some time ago. So, hopefully, Andrika, that addresses your questions to some degree. If anyone else has some other tips that you would send out to beginners trying to find out a way to keep tanks relatively easily, then please send them on. And thank you, Andrika.
And I think this would be a good place to take our break.
Pray that it works.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nine.
Okay, we are going to go to Kelsey in California.
Sorry, my chair.
Okay. And we talked about her lighting question last week.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. And she liked your fishy sunglasses idea.
Yeah, see, I have good ideas.
Oh, I know.
They're just horrifically impractical. You have to market it so that the fish think that it's cool to wear sunglasses, which means we would need little fishy TVs with sleek model fishies wearing the sunglasses and getting all the dates because they're wearing their sunglasses, and then all the little fishies would think that they needed sunglasses too.
Okay.
But that seems awfully complicated. Probably your suggestions were better.
Oh, I don't know. But we did suggest that she increase the ambient light in the room before turning on the light, and she's going to try that out and see how it goes. Hopefully it's working for her. She did say that her house was very dark in the mornings in this time of year, and the aquarium light was sometimes the first thing that turns on. So that is definitely a possibility that could be helpful. She's interested in trying the Flourish Excel. She's going to give that a go. And so, yeah, thank you, Kelsey, and we hope that helps, and let us know how that goes.
Okay, Matt in Perth, Australia. He says, this time I have two theoretical questions.
I like those.
One, if a home aquarium is large enough, bioload low enough, and the filtering is strong enough, would it be possible to operate an aquarium without doing water changes?
Well, this is a tricky question.
Does it have to be, like, lake-sized?
Well, I'll tell you.
Because you don't, what. You know, well, except you do kind of change water because it evaporates and it gets rains on.
And you have rivers flowing into them and rivers flowing out and seepage and all these things going on. I would
say
I wouldn't recommend doing it, but, and so my personal answer is don't do it, but I mean, this is a theoretical question.
How big would it have to be?
As Matt is asking. Well, okay, let's say you have really low bio load in a tank, okay? And you have some really great filtration, right? Let's say you have a 200-gallon tank.
And you have a snail.
Well, no, just to give you an idea, okay, I'm gonna jump from that to something else, sort of, but aquaponics, okay? The idea behind aquaponics, we haven't talked about that on the show, have we?
I don't remember.
Well, it's a setup where you are growing plants and fish, and the plants rely on nutrients produced by the fish to grow, and the fish live in water, and they live in water that is purified by the plants in terms of their wastes are being removed from the water by the plants. And in these setups, there are setups that people maintain where water is not actually changed, it is merely topped off. Okay.
Just
fish,
replace what evaporates.
The fish grow and live and even breed in these water conditions. Okay, the plants thrive and produce, you know, food for people. So the system, in this case, works. Of course, in this case, we have an immense amount of surface area. We're talking hundreds
surface
to thousands
area.
To tens of thousands of gallons of water, and we have plants that are sucking nitrates and or ammonium and nitrite out of the water. They're removing these wastes and turning them into plant biomass at large rate. There are a lot of plants in there. There are fish that wouldn't survive in a system like that. These systems do occasionally suffer things like ammonia spikes, where the fish that are living in them are typically things like tilapia or goldfish or koi, which can often weather a bit of an ammonia spike. It's not good for them, but they can survive it. So, in these systems, certain fish can survive without water changes. However, there are other species that could not survive in a system like that. And I would say, well, it is possible if you have a large tank with a very small bioload and you have really good filtration that you could have fish that survive, but I don't think it would be an ideal situation. Let's say you have enough plants in the tank that you're also not just biologically turning ammonia into nitrate, but you're also having plants that are sucking pretty much all the nitrates out, so the nitrates are basically zero in your system. Okay, that's good, and you could have fish that would do okay in there, and some would even breed and so on. But there are other things going on. There will be certain things that will not be removed from the water by the plants. for example, certain growth-inhibiting hormones that fish produce, and maybe some other metabolites in there that the plants would not remove. And so they'd still be dealing with that. And you might not be getting the trace elements supplement that you need to, that often are sufficiently dealt with by frequent parcel water changes. And if you are not exporting and importing water all the time, you might not be getting enough of those. So there, hopefully that answers the question. You think that pretty much covers it?
I think so.
It's possible, and in certain situations it can even sort of work, but in aquaria, where we want the water also to be, you know, clear and looking good, then it's not the best option. But a great theoretical question.
Okay, his second question. He says, I have been watching house design TV shows, and I thought if you could keep it clean, would a skylight connected all the way to the top of a fish tank by a light tunnel provide good aquarium lighting?
You know, it has been done. I remember reading in an article in Aquarium Fish magazine, may it rest in peace, I miss it. It mentioned that. Someone had written in and asked about it, and one of the authors responded and included a picture of one of their own tanks that was under a light tunnel. And it had emergent plants in it as well as submerged plants, and they were all doing great. So yeah, it can work.
That would be fun.
There are things to be aware of. I mean, depending on how much light it gets, the intensity of light and the photo period, you could have some algae issues, of course, but you can have that with the, you know, just a light fixture too. So that's not unique to that. But at any rate, it can work. Yes.
That would be neat.
And that's another cool question.
And this is something else he says, right?
Yeah. This is his aquarium fantasy, which I really like.
Yes. He says, an in-wall aquarium is definitely on my bucket list. Okay. For those of you, anybody who doesn't know what a bucket list is, I don't know if that's just an American phrase.
Well, it's not just an American
phrase.
Oh,
no, because
he's using
in
it from
Australia.
Okay,
I don't know if it's just an American and Australian phrase. Because, you know, maybe it's just countries that start with A that use this. See, they can say it in Argentina, but maybe they don't say it in Poland. I don't know.
Okay.
Don't kick buckets in Poland. I don't know. Kick something else. Okay, anyways, the phrase kick the bucket means to die, right? So your bucket list is like a list of things that you want or that you have to do, you want to do before you kick the bucket, before you die. So, okay, an in-wall aquarium is definitely on my bucket list. It would have completely automatic water changes. The new water would be reverse osmosis filtered, preheated, and dosed with vitamins, minerals, and nutrients. The used aquarium water would be pumped into a tank used by the garden's reticulation system.
That's
all of the equipment would be hidden inside a soundproof cabinet. I like that one. Under the tank, with ventilation to make sure the equipment did not overheat. It'd be at least 2 meters long and separate a room. Just a fantasy I thought you guys might enjoy. We have had similar fantasies.
We have, yeah. I've been wanting a tank built into a wall ever since.
Forever?
How old was I? 11?
Since you knew what a wall was?
And the aquarium was. Yeah, I think I probably knew what an aquarium was before I knew what a wall was.
Yeah, you probably did.
Yeah, that does sound great. I love it. I'm totally there.
Excuse me.
2 meters long, we could do maybe in Buenos.
How many feet?
It'd be fun.
It's approximately 3 feet in a meter?
In a meter, so about
six
approximately
feet?
6 feet. Not exactly, but somewhere around there.
Yeah. Oh, goodness, excuse me. It's been a long day.
Indeed. That is cool. Thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Mick.
Okay.
He says, hi guys, just thought I'd let you know that I'm about to embark on a new career in aquatics.
Woohoo, I love this.
Careers
I'm excited about this.
Careers in aquatics is a happy thing.
I'm excited for you all to hear this. This is cool.
I haven't heard it yet. I'm just reading this straight.
I know.
So. My gardening business has been losing traction this year with the slow economy and the wettest summer ever here in the UK. Last week I received a call from a friend who had heard that a local water gardening center was looking for a part-time assistant in their tropical fish department. Hey, hey. And after going in for a chat, if you can call an hour and a half of fish talk a chat, I have been employed for 2 days a week there and can keep my gardening business going too. The perfect solution.
Very cool.
That is very cool. Congratulations.
Indeed.
So this coming Sunday, the 25th, I will be roaming around Woodlands Nurseries net in hand and telling everyone to listen to Aquarimax. Woohoo! I think it was mentioning my connections with you guys that got me the job. Well, cool! Glad we could be of help.
I find that cool. Amusing, but cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. And that is really cool that you got such an interesting job.
I know. You want a job like that?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go get you a job like that 2 days a week, huh? That would be cool.
Well, he's not just doing that. He's also running his gardening business.
Well, no, that's why I said 2 days a week, because he's doing the other thing the rest of the days of the week.
Yeah.
I didn't mean he's not only working 2 days a week. That's not what I meant. I'm having a day of things coming out wrong. So if I sound like a crazy person tonight, you'll just have to forgive me. Okay, goes on to say, I went on a musk hunt this weekend but came back empty-handed.
And he's talking about a musk turtle.
Okay, I was going to ask, because...
Musk deer.
Musk rat.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was talking about a musk turtle.
Okay, what's a musk turtle?
A turtle.
Do they stink?
Some of them do.
Why do we want to catch them then?
Well, he's... They don't...
Are we making... I'm sure Mick is not making perfume out of them.
No, he's looking for one for a pet.
But they stink?
Well, not always.
But you don't really know ahead of time if it's going to stink or not.
No, they...
This is a boy thing? Maybe you just like to go find stinky animals.
No, if you keep it in a tank and it's all happy and everything, you don't have to worry about it so much.
If it has a bad day, is it stinky then? I'm sorry. Okay, going on. Oh, he saw some at an aquatic store. Okay, so he didn't really go out hunting in, like, a pond.
No,
they're native to
the southeastern
today.
United States.
Then how did Mick go looking for them?
In a pet store.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Okay.
What did you have for dinner?
Same thing you had. I just shouldn't eat cheese. Okay. So he did see some in an aquatic superstore, but they were very small, at just about an inch diameter, and I thought they would be a little fragile at that size. I was thinking of something around two inches as a reasonable starter. So I'm undecided whether to get a common or a razorback type.
Hmm, the razorback look kind of cool.
You have razorback musk turtles?
Yeah.
They sound like, I don't know, something out of a...
Bayou?
Yeah, or like some kind of graphic novel about mutant killer animals, razorback musk turtle.
Adolescent mutated Chelonians.
Yeah, something
that
like that.
Study martial arts.
Uh-huh. But I can see that as like a manga.
Yeah.
Like a Pokemon ripoff, you know, with like the motion lines, the razorback musk turtle.
Yeah.
List his attacks and his health points. Okay. I also ordered 2 peppermint shrimp for my mini marine setup at a local fish store. I discovered an Aptasia right on the edge of my pulsing zinnia frag, and after a week of looking around local fish stores and finding no peppermint shrimp, the common reply being, "We just sold the last one." Ooh, that's annoying. The frag died, and I am convinced that it was stung or just interfered with by the Aptasia to the point where it gave up. Very disappointing.
Mm, indeed. I'm
darn Aptasias. They are annoying.
I love the little pulsing zinnias. They're very cool.
Why do they call them pulsing zinnias?
Because they move.
In a pulsing fashion?
Not just a slow movement, but yeah, they kind of...
Like a... With?
They pulsate, yeah.
Oh.
They're very cool.
Interesting.
Well, not always, but when they're in, you know, good, proper conditions,
when they are
they
happy,
do it.
They do.
Yeah. Proper conditions for it, they do it. And, yeah, peppermint shrimp are one of the best controls for Aptasia, so hopefully, as long as you get the correct species, because there are several different species sold under the name peppermint shrimp, and only some of them eat Aptasia, so hopefully they order in the right one.
So he says, so I hope to get the peppermints established in there for a month or so, and then possibly look at picking up a few new corals after Christmas. My birthday is, I don't know if he wants us to say his actual birthday, but...
I think he's okay, because he put it right there. He's probably fine.
Okay, January 1st. You're New Year, baby. And I have been dropping some very heavy hints at home of gift options.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to do it. And corals, I mean, you know, that's a lot of fun. I love corals.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
And that's all cool stuff, and hopefully I'm not too much of a freak tonight that none of that came out too weird. I don't know.
Oh, no, I think it came out all right.
I think I'm just tired, and I have too much on my brain, and so I'm saying weird things. It's all, like, getting jumbled in my brain and coming out in some kind of bizarre mashup.
That's okay. It'll amuse everyone. And he also mentions he's going to be sending us the Aquatic Lives things that he was saying.
Oh, yes,
the magazine and the program, so he's going to be doing that. Thank you again. And You know, we didn't do one of our setups. We need to remember to do that next episode.
Now our time's about over. We just finished our time, so we forgot.
Thank you to Andreka in Oregon, Kelsey in California, Matt in Perth, Australia, and Mick in Cardiff, UK. And until next week.
And those of you in the US, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, or to those of you who might celebrate it in some other country because you have connections with it.
And if you don't, I hope you just have a marvelous dinner on Thursday.
Right. And may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.